Hey, it's Christine from Storyworthy. Today on the show, we're celebrating our 500th episode with comedian and photographer Mike Carano. Today, Mike talks about one of the most unusual road trips you've ever heard about.
You are going to the Wax Museum to buy a wax Burt Reynolds. What am I doing? What am I talking about? We're going to drive a wax statue of Burt Reynolds to Florida? So Saturday morning rolls around, and I'm there bright and early for the auction. I've got a bidding number, and I'm there to buy wax Burt Reynolds. And she goes, hey, someone wants to say hi to you. Hands me her phone. Now I'm on the phone with Burt friggin' Reynolds.
Today on Storyworthy, we hear about how to drive a wax figure of Burt Reynolds from California to Florida. It's our 500th episode. Stick around.
Hi, this is Mike Carano, and you are listening to Storyworthy.
Hey! Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm coming to you from Los Angeles, California. And today, you guys, it's our 500th episode. 500! Can you believe it? And whether you're a longtime fan of the show or a new listener, welcome to Storyworthy. Now, I hope you guys had a chance to listen to last week's episode. It was Story Smash, live from the Hollywood Improv. And I have to tell you, this was like a perfect show, if you ask me. We had Danny Zucker, Wayne Fetterman, and Wendy Liebman judging. So go back and listen to that.
Yeah, who's your favorite judge so far?
So it moves very quickly. Well, you know,
there's got to be somebody that...
They're so good. There's so many good judges, yeah. Honestly. And I like them for different reasons. Okay, for instance, Danny Zucker has played now like 5 times.
Okay.
So obviously I love him.
Yeah.
Because he's amazing. But Gina Grad is one of my favorite people of all time. And when she judges, like, I know there's going to be some heart in the show, as it were, because she's just going to always put out like a positive vibe. And she's funny, she's quick, but she's also just kind.
Yeah.
And so
I've noticed that.
For that, I would like Gina on the show every single time. Now you take Heather McDonald. She's a huge personality. She's so flippin' funny, I almost pee my pants. But she is almost so big, it dominates. So there's a balance you have to find in all the judges. So it's interesting. And that's why I don't curate the show. My co-producer, John Cohen, does, because I can't choose. I choose everybody.
Yeah, I wouldn't like that. I don't want to be put in that position.
Anyway, you guys, go back and listen to Story Smash from last week. But today, you hear the man talking to me right now. His name is Mike Carano. And I have to say, you do so many things, Mike.
I fret. I worry.
But here the
compulsively,
thing is, right,
aimlessly, okay, so stress out.
Your hook, as it were, would be being stressed, anxious, and depressed.
God, I hope not. Really?
But you're
I don't
so
like that at all.
Kind, and you're so easy to talk to, and you're so funny.
You know, you're be the guy that's just always
you
stressed.
You know you're more than that, but you know that you are. Because look how likable you are.
Thank you for saying that.
People want you around. Seriously. And today, Mike Carano is on Storyworthy, and he brings forth the topic, delivering Burt Reynolds. Delivering Burt Reynolds. So I say, well, this is a win-win, because I love Mike Carano, and I love Burt Reynolds.
Hold your judgment.
Burt Reynolds, ladies and gentlemen. You know, I'm sure you guys all know who I'm talking about. He's an actor, and he's a director and a producer, and he's a former American football player.
Yes, he is.
He is. And he was born, I'm looking at it right now, he was born in 1936.
I thought you were just pulling this from memory, and I was like, wow, fantastic. What a great random topic for me to pick.
Yes, don't pretend. This computer is not in front of me. This is a toaster.
I know, I'm oblivious. What is that magic silver plate you have?
But here's the thing, in the 1970s,
yeah,
you know,
it was the biggest box office draw in the world.
Burt Reynolds was the shit, man. He was the deal. And I remember seeing him frequently at the drive-in theater where my father would take all of us in the Ford Country Squire, 6 kids. For some reason, we wore our pajamas to the drive-in. I'm not sure what that was about. And then my dad would put blankets on the hood and we would lay amongst the luggage rack, you know, getting stabbed in the back. And watch Smokey the Bandit at the Rinaldi's.
Fantastic.
At the Rinaldi's drive-in, yeah. So there's some good times to be had in the 70s.
I know. Hey, in the 70s, my cousin, who was my hero, took me to a drive-in movie. picked up his girlfriend and her little brother, and they stuck us in sleeping bags in a dark parking space next to the car while they had sex. And I was lying in a sleeping bag, freezing, watching Carrie at 10 o'clock at night in Arizona, waiting for a car to pull in and kill us. Because we were in a parking space. That's my first drive-in experience. It was great. Perfect.
Were they 70s. Were they seriously having sex in the car?
Yeah. He was like 19 or 20, and I was so excited. I'm going out with my cousin. I was probably like 9 or 10. And he picked up his girlfriend and picked up her little brother, and then they gave us sleeping bags and said, lay down next to the truck.
And they put that little can speaker.
All I remember is I don't like scary movies, and Carrie was the film. And I was outside in a sleeping bag, sitting next to a guy I didn't know while they were in the truck fooling around.
That movie still holds up, by the way.
Yeah.
That movie was amazing.
So does Bad News Bears.
Oh, yeah. Bad News Bears was so well written.
Yeah, and it's Walter so, Matthau it would so never Tatum get made O'Neil. Right now.
Yeah, because, too long of shots, too much
No, but
dialogue,
I mean, he's
much...
drinking with kids. Oh, yeah. There's racism.
Yeah, it's not funny.
And there's sexual innuendo
so
constantly.
Funny.
It's the best.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
That was my father's kind of humor, big time. Yeah. And so therefore my kind of humor as well. And in that genre would be Soap. The show Soap was so good.
Yep.
All in the Family, of course, a little earlier. But we're talking about Burt Reynolds. And of course, in the 1970s, not only Smoking the Bandit, but there was the Cannonball Run. That was huge. And The Longest Yard, that was huge. And then, of course, Deliverance. And that was 1972. That's how old that was.
And he hosted The Tonight Show a bunch of times. Yeah, he did all kinds of things.
He did all sorts of things. And then sort of made a comeback in the early 2000s.
Boogie Nights,
yeah.
Which I think is his greatest performance.
Yeah,
it's one of my favorite films.
Yeah, he was actually nominated for an Academy Award, Best Supporting Actor. That was 97.
That movie, to me, is almost a perfect movie.
Yeah.
Paul Thomas Anderson is my favorite director by far.
Yeah, he's amazing. And Boogie Nights was fantastic. I absolutely love Roller Girl.
Everybody in that movie gives the best performance, in my opinion, that they've ever given. Everybody.
Yeah.
It's almost flawless. And people have told me it's not that great of a movie because it has a happy ending and that would have never happened. Guess what? I like happy endings.
Here's the thing with Boogie Nights. They had those long camera shots that kind of spun around and showed you all the time what was happening at all moments. So it was really an ensemble piece.
Yes, it
was. Everybody needed everybody else. So nobody was really... That's why it stands out, that everybody stood out.
Yes.
Because they stood out together. And you know what else did that for me was American Beauty did that
American
for me.
American Beauty, absolutely.
So there's a couple of films, Goodfellas, of course. There's some good films like that that are just, that hold up. I'm sure we would enjoy the same ones.
That's the conclusion of today.
That's it.
There's the story. There's some films that hold up. Good night, everybody. There's some songs that hold.
Try the veil.
Stand up to the test of time. That's
Ladies
right.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Yesterday's still a good song. Weird,
we
right?
Before we get to Mike's story, I wanted to remind you guys to head over to storyworthypodcast.com. Just go over there, look at the site, see what's happening, and then follow me on all the social media platforms, which you already do, but whatever. I would appreciate one more listener, one more follower, one more good review. You know how it goes. I don't make the rules here, Mike. These are different rules. These are like...
We don't make any of the rules.
The podcasting gods have said that it is important to get these ratings and these reviews.
I've fought it long enough. I'm finally giving in to letting the universe make things and not trying to control it.
That's exactly right. And anyway, you guys, you really help me out when you do that. And also, don't forget to subscribe to Storyworthy on Apple Podcasts because that as well super, super helps me. All right, you guys, he's here right now, Mike Carano. Now, you have been the host of so many different shows. You have so much content, Mike Carano, so much content. For instance, you have...
Because I'm just a big blabbermouth.
Well, no, but how about when you hosted the show 5 Minutes with Mike?
Oh, no. Did you watch that stuff? Oh, my God. I'm so not proud of anything I've ever done.
Really? Oh.
I've done videos and songs and stuff like that and little things here and there.
You're also an amazing photographer.
Thank you very much.
And I'm so impressed by the photos at the Improv. I know that the photos like at the Comedy Store are iconic for their own reason. They're like headshots. But at the Improv, they actually have these huge, beautiful pictures that you took of comedians on stage.
Thank you.
And you've taken... the best pictures of the best comedians ever. I mean, I look at the list of everybody you've done and...
I have hundreds and hundreds of thousands of photos of comics and they're all just sitting on hard drives on my living room floor.
Well, but
where
a lot
do
they
remain?
But a lot of them are out there as well.
Yeah, I mean, such as, less than... correct. I don't know why I decided to have to beat it up.
Yeah, no, no. Just say yes, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
And
I'm trying.
Are, you do a lot of good stuff on over on Instagram, and that is just at Mike Carano.
This makes me so uncomfortable.
I'm so sorry. It shouldn't make you uncomfortable.
It's like a bio or something.
You've, well, it is sort of a bio, but I want people out there to know what you've done. You've accomplished so much on so many different platforms. You can find Mike over on his website, MikeCarano.com.
Or at my therapist's office.
Or at his therapist's office, or on Instagram, on all these different outlets. And check him out, you guys.
You've or homeless done, at some point.
And also, your YouTube page is really fun.
Thank you.
All right, you guys, wherever you are, put your hands together for Mike Carano.
Let me start with another story that is not the story I'm going to go into. There was a point in the 90s where my boss, who owned the improv, said, "You like Star Trek. Can you come to Paramount for a meeting?" And I went to this meeting at Paramount and pitched the idea of a live Star Trek episode to them. And over the course of an hour, not knowing what I was doing, not having any expectations, certainly just talking out my ass, I happened to get a deal to direct and produce Star Trek. And part of my inability to understand how... Okay, part of my unprofessionalism was, instead of casting it properly, I just randomly called my friends and said, "Will you be in Star Trek?" And they all said yes. I called my friends and I cast them in this live production of Star Trek. We had a 13-week run at the Irvine Improv. It was fantastic. But the reason I bring that up is because that Star Trek experience was something that I wanted so bad. It caused me pain. It was all-consuming. When the idea that this could possibly happen, that I was going to get to produce and direct this show, even was laid out before me, I was obsessed. And I could not let this slip away. Even though I was powerless in this situation. It wasn't up to me. It was up to these executives at Paramount. Matt Luth, Steve Malunzi were the stars of the Star Trek episode. That wrapped up its 13-week run. Now, the reason Matt and Steve and I are friends is because the three of us are obsessed with the 70s, and we are truly obsessed, and we've amassed large collections of 70s memorabilia. My entire house was covered in 70s posters and all the Star Trek stuff and all my Star Wars things, and just I have a spending problem, and I buy everything I want that somehow ties into happy childhood memories. Matt calls me one day, and this is the second thing that I've wanted so bad that it almost caused my heart to hurt. I wanted this to happen. I could not let this slip away. Again, powerless, had no control over it. "Hey, what are you doing on Saturday?" This is 1996. I went, "I don't know, what am I doing?" He goes, "You are going to the Wax Museum to buy a wax Burt Reynolds." Matt and Steve have one of the largest collections of Burt Reynolds memorabilia in the world. Over 1,000 pieces. Belt buckles, all the glassware from the Burt Reynolds dinner theater, every single t-shirt, every single movie, every single toy. Every single thing that ever had Burt Reynolds' name or face on it, they've collected, sometimes in triplicate. No joke. So they wanted me to go to the Wax Museum, which was going out of business after 36 years of being there, and buy the wax Burt Reynolds. I went down for a preview day, paid $300 to go in. Got inside, video camera, little running commentary. Got kicked out by a woman named Peanut. Didn't like me making a commentary, didn't like me shooting video, but by then I had already got to the Burt and assessed that it was the Burt we need to get our hands on, pronto, stat, ASAP. Went home, kind of bummed out that I get kicked out, kind of embarrassed. Decided, I'm going back tomorrow morning. This time, got kicked out within 5 minutes. I've been kicked out of a lot of places in my life, and so it's fine, it's fine. So Saturday morning rolls around, and I'm there bright and early for the auction, and I run immediately into Peanut, and she's giving me the eye. But nothing she can do now because I've got a bidding number and I'm there to buy wax Burt Reynolds. And I'm nervous as hell. I'm shaking. And I wait for an hour, 2 hours. Finally, we're coming near the Burt's lot number. Next on the auction block, Burt Reynolds. And all of a sudden it goes up for sale and I'm terrified. I'm like, I don't know how to do this. What do I do? Do I raise my hand? Do I buy it? Blown out of the water in 5 seconds. I had $700 on me. Immediately. Do I hear 2,000? Do I hear 2,500? I'm like, what the fuck? Immediately, no Burt Reynolds for me. So I leave, kind of sad, kind of depressed. That was a week of letdowns. I'm like, hey, I didn't get the Burt Reynolds. I got kicked out. At least I got a little bit of video. I'll use it for something, which I did. I get in my car. I call Matt, and I go, I'm sorry, man. I didn't get it. And he's like, yeah, no big. Thanks for trying. And then I went, God damn it. I left my deposit back at the Wax Museum. I'm almost home now. I turn around, go back to the Wax Museum, find parking, get in line to get my deposit back, and the first of a long series of unbelievable, amazing coincidences happens, which is I hear a woman in front of me say, I'm paying for Burt Reynolds. So then I said, I was bidding against you on that bird. She goes, you a big fan? I go, huge fan. My friends and I are psychotic fans, but they are on another level. She goes, okay, well, better luck next time. And I was like, oh, there's a next time? What? When's the next time? Like, this is my chance of a lifetime to own this Burt Reynolds, this 6 foot tall wax statue of Burt Reynolds that had been standing in the wax museum for 35 years. So I wait in line, get my money back. I turn around and she's there still on the phone. And she goes, hey, someone wants to say hi to you. Hands me her phone. Now I'm on the phone with Burt friggin' Reynolds. And I'll be honest with you, there was a lesson to be learned here. And the lesson was be in the moment and be present, because I wasn't. Because all I could think about was, when's he getting off the phone so I can call people and tell them I just talked to Burt Reynolds. Paying no attention to what Burt Reynolds was saying. The soothing, dulcet tones of Mr. Burt Reynolds. And I was freaking out inside. I was freaking out. And the entire time he's talking, I'm like, I need to say something. I need to say something. I need to be in this conversation. I need to be involved. Be present. You know, do something. So then I said, what are you going to do with that statue? And he goes, it's going to Florida State University, where I went to school. And it's going to be in the theater department on display. I promise you, I'm being completely truthful here. Before he finished the word display, I had said, my friends and I will drive it there for free. And not thinking about, we have jobs. We're three adult men. One guy's married with a kid. I was like, what am I doing? What am I talking about? We're going to drive a wax statue of Burt Reynolds to Florida, like right now for free. And Burt goes, give your information to Kate, his girlfriend, the person who bought it, who was standing right there, and we'll get back to you. That began 3 days of total giddy elation, desire, lust. There's nothing I wanted more in my life than this to happen. And it was completely 100% consuming. All of me. All of Matt. All of Steve. All we did was call each other. Did they call yet? Did they call yet? Did they call yet? Sunday. Monday. Tuesday. Nothing. We've heard nothing. And we knew it had to be out of the wax museum by Saturday, or else it reverts back to the wax museum. They lose it. Wednesday, truly sad. Truly depressed, because I'm like, this is not going to happen. This slipped away. They were bullshitting. They're not going to call us. And they weren't bullshitting, but they led us to believe that we might think about it. We might call you. I'm starting to get angry and I'm upset. By Wednesday night, we're kind of frantic. Like, everything in our life is on hold. Thursday, I'm clutching my phone all day, double checking the battery to make sure it's charged. I kid you not. Making sure I had a connection, not going anywhere where I had less than 3 bars. About 3 p.m. on Thursday, my phone rings. It's a number I don't recognize, and it's Kate, Burt's girlfriend. And she goes, you need to call Burt's lawyer right now. Very stern. So I call Burt's lawyer. This is the second in a series of unbelievable coincidences, at least in my mind. And it's something that I don't think will ever happen to me again. I call his lawyer, and he answers the phone, and he goes, small world, buddy, huh? He knows me from a TV show that I worked on in the 90s. And he goes, so you guys got a crew and you got some trucks and you're going to drive this wax bird across the country and you're going to make a documentary? Immediately started lying. Yes. Yes, we have a crew. We have trucks. We don't even have cameras, let alone a crew or trucks. And he goes, well, fax over your production insurance and we'll get a contract drawn up. I went, no problem. And I called Matt. I'm like, what's production insurance? I don't know. Matt jumps on it, gets us production insurance, $4,000 right there, out of pocket, on a credit card. I fax it to Burt's attorney. The next day, we get a contract, and we are going to pick up Wax Burt Reynolds on Saturday morning and drive it across the country. We borrow cameras. We grab a bunch of credit cards. I rent a minivan Saturday morning, bright and early. Matt and Steve and our friend Chris, that we invited along, show up at my house in Orange County, and we paint the minivan. Delivering Burt across the back, eastbound and down on the sides. And I made a bunch of those little baby on board stickers that said Burt on board in all the windows. We immediately started breaking the contract, which was, I think the primary concern they had was that Burt will be staying in a locked box, not to be removed for the entire duration of the trip. We didn't have a box, so we just threw his body in the back with our luggage, and I borrowed a drum case from my sister for the head. And we packed it with Star Trek t-shirts that were left over from the Star Trek show. Headed off to the Wax Museum, just out of our minds, excited, like, and nervous. And we were expecting Burt Reynolds might call us and find out how it's going. And we get to the Wax Museum. We pick up Waxbert. Matt and Steve are going berserk. This is their hero. And we're transporting a 6-foot-tall statue of him across the country. So now we've got Bert in the van. And we decide, let's take Bert to Fridays for lunch. So we go into TGI Fridays, place his head on the table. Broke the contract right there. Then we headed off to the beach in San Diego and set him up at the beach with his cowboy hat and his suit and his blazer so Bert could see the Pacific Ocean for one last time. Then trucked it on to Tucson, listening to the Cannonball Run soundtrack and reading his biography out loud. One of only two arguments that we had on the trip was in Tucson over dinner when Matt and I wanted to get up early and go to Tombstone. Steve wanted to go to church for some reason. And we had a little disagreement about that, about what was more important. Steve found a 6 o'clock mass and went to church, came back with donuts and coffee, so everything was groovy. And we headed off to Tombstone with, you know, our road trip companion, Waxbert Reynolds. We're in Tombstone. We meet a guy who owns a hat shop. And we go, "You Burt Reynolds fan?" He goes, "Go talk to my wife right now, across the street." I think her name was Adele, not sure. Older grandmother-like woman, very stern. We walk in with the Burt Reynolds head. She just points at us, turns her finger around, and gives us the old come with me sign. Takes us in her office. There's a Burt Reynolds centerfold over her desk. And just talked about Burt Reynolds for 15 or 20 minutes. Then we thought, let's celebrate this amazing that we're running into Burt Reynolds people everywhere we know. And everyone wants to talk about Burt Reynolds. So we go to the bar to have drinks, of course. It's 10 in the morning. We drink a couple of shots of whiskey. A guy is walking down that wooden sidewalk street in Tombstone. Sees the Burt Reynolds in the bar and comes in. Freaks out. "You got to meet my friend. He thinks he's Burt Reynolds. He's got the mustache. He dresses like Burt Reynolds. He talks like Burt Reynolds. His wife dresses like Sally Fields. And they have the Trans Am." We're like, "Where is he?" "That's a problem. He's in the middle of the desert with 200 head of cattle." We're like, "Let's go." So we drove our stupid minivan with Delivering Burt painted all over it, over the desert. And I mean truly over the desert. This wasn't on a road. This is like an hour into the desert, around cactus, over tumbleweeds, following him in his Jeep, and waited out there for this cowboy who came riding up on a horse with his black hat on to get pictures of him with Wax Burt. And we met his wife, and he had amazing Burt Reynolds stories. He had pictures of Burt, and he was like, "He's a hero of mine. When I first went and saw Smokey and the Bandit when I was a kid," and we were like, "This is magical, the stuff that's happening on this trip. This was an amazing coincidence." The next couple of days, we took Burt to the Davy Crockett Monument in Texas. We took Burt to restaurants, strip clubs, bars. We took him out with us everywhere. We treated him like he was one of the guys, man, and we were starting to become attached to him, frankly, even though we're three adult men with a wax statue of Burt Reynolds. One of the highlights for me was when we were in Texas, we pulled off the highway in the middle of nowhere, and we had two choices, McDonald's or Country Kitchen Cooking, KKK, and we're, of course, racist, so we went to the Klan. No, we went there because it was a barbecue place, and we were freaked out. I'd never seen something like that. I'd never seen a restaurant that spelled Country Kitchen Cooking KKK and made it very, very prominent. And best barbecue I've ever had, by the way. Racists are really good cooks. Waitress comes over, and she goes, "You know, if you stay on this street right here for about 30 miles, there's a town called Hallettsville, and Burt Reynolds filmed a movie there with Dolly Parton like back in the 80s. We're like, "Okay, we'll go check it out." Sure enough, we get to Hallettsville. Matt and Steve are going insane. They're like, "This is the place. This is where Burt was here. Burt filmed the movie here." So we pull over. We set up the Burt Reynolds on the court of the Hallettsville courthouse steps. And now a little crowd starts to gather. And this is a very, very small community, very, very small place in the middle of nowhere. And it was all these women that came out in their 40s. And they all had stories about when Burt was there. And they all had stories about trying to get into his hotel room to bone down with Burt Reynolds in his heyday. And they were just so excited to see Wax Burt and share their stories with us. To an extent, they were a little, I can't say what I'm thinking. I'm like, you can say, "No, I can't. I cannot say what I'm thinking. You know, this is a Catholic community here and we don't talk." And I was like, "Okay," but it was really a magical experience because these coincidences, these amazing, amazing things just kept happening. While we were in Hallettsville, a guy came over and said, "I want you to meet the guy who owns the bakery over there. It's closed right now, but he's coming. I just called him at home." And he opens the bakery, and there's pictures of Burt Reynolds everywhere. There's pictures of Dom DeLuise Dolly Parton, all this stuff left over from Bessel Whorehouse in Texas. And he's like, yeah, it was great, man. We would all meet here and Dom would come over and Jim Nabors would come over and sing songs and the little old ladies. And it was just these fantastic stories. And then somehow we got on the topic of a flood that rushed through the town and destroyed everything shortly after the movie was filming. And he was showing us the water line in his bakery. And while he's showing us the water line, he goes, oh, I got something. And he digs through paperwork and pulls out Polaroids of Bert when he was there. And all these, and we're like, this is amazing. Like, this guy almost forgot about these. It was just one thing after another. And these just incredible, everywhere we went, we ran into Bert Reynolds people at car shows in Texas. We got pulled over twice in Texas, and both by county mounties. And both of the cops were like, you got Bert Reynolds in there? I'm like, well, we got a wax Bert. No Bert, huh? We got a wax Bert. And they pulled us over partially because we were speeding. And also because they wanted to see why we had Burt Reynolds stuff all over the outside of the van. Caricatures of Burt, all these, you know, we brought along books and his centerfold was in the window and all this goofy stuff as adult men are likely to do when they're taking a road trip with a wax Burt Reynolds. I'll tell you a couple more things and then I'll wrap it up. New Orleans was special because it was 6 months after Katrina and it was devastating and it was heartbreaking and it was terrifying. It was very frightening. There was nothing happening. There were no people out. There was no music happening. The restaurants were empty and it was just a sad situation. Like I said, it was heartbreaking. You're looking at all these trailers and all these homeless people and just garbage everywhere. And we realized about 10 minutes in, let's just move on to Mississippi and get out of here because this is too not a good vibe for us to be here trying to have fun and be funny. And like, oh, look, we have a wax Burt Reynolds. This makes everything, you know. And as we're walking back to our van, there's a group of street musicians sitting there. And they look like they're at the end of drug addiction. They're not in good shape. They're the only people we see in New Orleans. The only people in the French Quarter. Just... as a fluke, we went, hey, you guys don't by any chance know any music from Burt Reynolds movies. And they launched into Eastbound and Down, and it was chilling. It's as if it was the most requested song they had ever done. And we were standing there with our mouths hanging open like, this is like, why would they ever know this song? They just went 1, 2, 3, 4, and they just nailed it. And it was wonderful, and it was beautiful, and it was an exceptional trip. And of course, I was miserable the entire time because I don't enjoy things till it's over. Like when I reflect back on it, I'm like, that was the greatest time ever. I remember that night specifically because we got drunk as we did every night, and we were in the hotel, and that was kind of a frightening experience because that was when we actually had a serious discussion about keeping him and how we could lose contact with Bert's people and just keep the wax Bert for ourselves, because granted alcohol might have had something to do with it, but we were truly attached to the wax Bert, man. He was our friend now, and we deserved him more than they did, and they weren't going to, you know, they weren't going to have any respect for him, and they didn't appreciate him like we did. And that turned out to be, you know, pretty true, because by the time we got to Tallahassee, we checked into a hotel and we decided we're going to go out without Wax Burt tonight because we've had so many good times with him and we've taken so many chances risking that Wax Burt getting damaged and stuff that we needed to just be by ourselves. It's also where we realized that at the time, three guys in their 30s are pretty popular with Florida college chicks, because all we could think about was, I can't believe all these girls are talking to us at this bar. They seem like they're into us. And Steve's like, yeah, because we have mortgages. And I was like, eh, that sucks. You know, you sure it's not Bert? It's not the wax Bert that we talked about, that we can't stop talking about? That's all we talk about? We get back to the hotel that night, and that's when things could have taken an ugly turn for the worse, because we're like, now's the time to sign him, and now's the time to take selfies with Bert. And that's when we dropped him and didn't get damaged too bad, and we realized we may have just fucked up this entire trip by going, I think we should sign him. The three guys that drove him across the country, not our prerogative, and then we dropped the head. Granted, damage wasn't that bad. Overslept, missed our call from the university the next day, missed our call from the contacts, just depressed and sad that we're finally dropping off this package that we had been delivering for a week for our hero, Burt Reynolds. We get to Florida State. We kind of scope it out. We want to, you know, do a little recon to make sure that it goes smooth and to make sure that we look cool. And couldn't have been a bigger letdown. You could not have imagined a bigger letdown. One woman from the theater department reluctantly came out, brought a student because his pass key was working. They could not have given a shit about this Waxbert Reynolds statue. They couldn't have cared about us. It was one of the saddest moments after this week of excitement and fun and joy and driving around the country and seeing all this stuff with Waxbert. And I remember the sound of the door closing because they didn't have a place to put him. And we put him in a dark room in their photography department. And I remember Steve getting teary-eyed, which he'll still deny to this day, but he definitely cried, walking over to double check the door. And I vividly remember the clump of the door closing. And then I remember us walking out to the car in silence, just sad. Like, it's over. Like, that's it. That's the fanfare we get after driving a Waxbert Reynolds 2,850 miles across the country in a minivan with three of the biggest fans of this guy in the world. And that's what happens. And we got our flights back to California. We get back and then we kind of did a little bit more research and found out how expensive it was to license music. So I ended up writing the music for the movie, which I'm proud of because it's as stupid and as poorly done as the movie was done. And that's not the end of the story. The end of the story was, about a month later, I get a phone call from Kate. And she's pissed. She's mad. She's Bert's girlfriend. She paid for it. And she was very genuine in her anger. And she goes, "You screwed up, man." And I went, "Oh God, they found the signatures." Like, it got there all right. I have documentation to prove it. I have 25 hours of video to prove that we never damaged it. She goes, "That's not what I'm talking about. You guys got the wrong Burt Reynolds. We wanted the Deliverance Burt, not the Cowboy Burt." And she goes, "You need to find the Deliverance Burt." Now, granted, that wasn't my fault. She bought it. But I was like, that's the best ending I could have to this story ever. And that movie is either the world's dumbest, least expensive movie or the world's most expensive home movie. And it's on YouTube right now. And that is the story of Delivering Bert.
This story, Mike, is so engaging and so funny on so many different levels. I mean, I totally see this as almost a feature film because it really, it's about...
Well, cut this part for sure. I've had offers from people that are like, "We want to make that a film." And I'm like, "No, thanks."
Oh my gosh, because really it's...
I'm a moron. I'm a complete nutter fool.
The idea of the bonding of the three of you going on that road trip and your friendship and then going across America and having these ironic situations.
Yeah.
People just randomly loving Burt Reynolds. I can see this also being done for other stars. I was thinking like Michael Jackson would certainly be applicable.
We had a meeting after this movie was done. We had a couple of production companies that wanted to finish it and make it a real film. And it just got weird with Bert's publicist and stuff. Bert's publicist hated it. And he's like, "Why are you in it? Why take out the negative stuff?" And we were just like, "Fuck this. Fuck you. We're not listening to some fucking publicist."
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. And you guys are on such a funny level of comedy. I mean, it's such smart comedy. And
but we did have a pitch from Comedy Central wanted to talk to us. And we did have a pitch called... I can't remember. Bert's Angels or something where we do chores for celebrities. Like they'll go, "William Shatner wants to sell his house." And then we have to learn how to sell a house and we have to get a real estate license.
Oh, that's fun.
And they passed on it after a month.
But I still think the idea of, the whole iconic figure, you know, like Elvis Presley. So I remember somebody once telling me, "Give us this day your daily Elvis," because every single day you will hear an Elvis Presley reference, whether it's a song or a picture or a word.
Can you imagine that level of notoriety?
Right. So he says every time that it occurs to him during the day, he says that out loud. "Give us this day your daily Elvis." And you could do that, I think, with John Lennon. Could be applicable. Maybe even to some extent Marilyn Monroe, but maybe that's too old now. I don't know.
I don't know.
But definitely Burt Reynolds, because he's also alive.
Yeah.
So he's iconic because he's still producing and making things happen.
We frantically got a rough cut of this movie, which is what's on YouTube. Super rough.
Yeah.
We frantically got it done. I got it done because we were afraid Bert was going to die, and we wanted it to come out before he died, and that was 12 years ago, and he's still alive.
Yeah, I think
and he's signing up for 82. More movies.
Yeah, he's like 82 yeah. now.
But he might be in the new Quentin Tarantino movie, the Manson movie.
Yeah, oh, wouldn't that be great? Yeah. Oh, I hope so. What does a wax figure feel like?
It's heavier than you would think. The head... It's much more sturdy than you. When there was a point in the trip where we were doing a little bit of research, and this was like three quarters of the way through, and they were talking about how intricately the hairs are put in one by one, the mustache hairs are put in one by one, the eyebrows, the eyelashes, and that each wax figure takes between like 500 and 700 hours. It was some yeah. I might be wrong in the numbers, but they
made
said
by who, like some Indonesian
like artists.
Children.
No. These are like artists that were hired by the wax museum that worked there, like Madame Tussauds.
Oh, I see.
And,
yeah.
And this was in the 60s and 70s. And
so it was like real works of art.
Absolutely. This like thing the was the spitting doll. Image. It's yeah. just like a real doll, but the hole is way bigger.
And the hairline is probably better on the yes. on the wax figure than
but it was stunning. Actually. It was stunning, and they estimated the cost in the 70s was between $15,000 and $25,000.
Wow.
Per wax figure.
Per wax
and
figure.
You know, and we just went like, oh my God, we had that thing sitting on a table in a Fridays and on the floor of a barbecue restaurant.
Fridays. That's hilarious. Well, you know, it got a little wear and tear, but I think it's, you know, like the real Burt Reynolds, it probably just added a little flavor.
Yes.
You know?
That's I like to think of
it. Was the doll, I mean, did you, was it a would you call it a doll or a figure?
We called it Waxbert.
Waxbert.
I don't. It's not a doll because it was 6 feet tall.
Was he ever naked, as it were?
No, he was wearing like Western clothes with Sansa belts and like a jacket, and he had a cowboy hat.
So all those items were sewed on. Like
no,
you couldn't
no,
take those off.
You could take them off, but there was no point to it because
well,
it's,
when
it's
you were trying to sign him, for Christ's sakes.
Oh, we took his head off and signed his chest cavity.
Oh my gosh, that's yeah. so dirty.
Yeah.
I don't know about that.
He did have chest hair, though. I mean,
he had, and you think of that Playboy centerfold.
Yeah.
I think it was 1976
yeah,
that he did
something
it.
Like that.
He had so much hair.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. nowadays, men don't have any of that hair. Men shave as much as women.
Okay, now you're making me self-conscious.
Well, I'm just saying, it's very.
I'm too old to give a shit about my hair.
Anyway, listen, you've done so many amazing things, and this story is fantastic.
Thank you.
And
thank
I really
you.
Thank you for bringing it because. We don't talk about the 70s enough on this show.
No, we got to do that. You could make a vintage-looking 70s logo
yeah,
for your
right?
new offshoot of this show.
There you go.
Story-worthy 1970s.
There you go. Now, my father had on the back of his office door, he was an accountant, and on the back of the door, he had a poster, the Farrah Fawcett iconic mm-hmm. poster on the back of his door. So 70s,
yeah,
right?
It's in my living room.
No, it isn't, is it?
Swear to God. This is not bullshit, what I'm about to say. I don't know why I preface it with, please cut that out. God, I hate when people say that. I'm not lying, because you know me, I'm a total liar, but this one's the truth. I met Farrah Fawcett, and I swear to God, had a box of old magazines that I was clinging to in my car at the time. And one of them was a Dynamite magazine with her on the cover.
Wow.
And I was like, I walked in with a magazine and she was sitting with a friend of mine. And he goes, I'm sorry to bother you. I go, I don't normally do this, but would you sign this for me? And he goes, where the fuck did you get that? I'm like, it's mine from when I was a kid. And he's like, you're fucking shitting me. And I swear to God, this was in my trunk. And he's like, are you fucking bullshit? And I was like, I swear to God, I have this magazine. It says Mike Carano, 1935 Copper Street, Tucson, Arizona, right on the front. And I had it in my car and I got her to sign it. And then I hung out and then I walked her to her car. And this wasn't that long ago, 10 years ago, maybe. And she was a little tipsy and she was like clinging to me. And I was like, holy moly, I might have a chance to make out with Farrah Fawcett. And I was like my heart was racing. I was like, what if she's drunk and she wants to make out when I get to her car? And I don't even know if this probably didn't cross her mind once. And it was all in my head because she was holding onto my arm. It was more than I ever expected. I never thought I would meet Farrah Fawcett, my first crush by far. And I'm like, oh my God, like it's 30 years later and she's holding onto my arm and I'm walking her to her car. And what if I make out with Farrah Fawcett? It was such a weird feeling.
That's a crazy story. Was she about 60 then? 55?
Probably,
60,
yeah.
65, yeah.
It was probably 2 years before she died or 3 years before
People
she died.
People forget that she died on the same day as Michael Jackson.
Ooh.
No, she did.
Wow.
And her death gets passed right over because then Michael died.
You know where she's buried, which is a fascinating cemetery to go to that I didn't know existed. I just have these anxiety drives I do, and I've discovered stuff. Like I've discovered my favorite place in the world in Death Valley just by anxiety driving into the middle of nowhere. But I started going and visiting cemeteries at like 5 in the morning and 6 in the morning.
And where is she?
There's a cemetery in Westwood amongst the skyscrapers. I had no idea it existed.
Oh, yeah, that's where
existed.
Marilyn Monroe is,
yes,
too.
Yes.
Westwood Cemetery.
And it's off an alley.
Yeah.
And I walked in there. I'm like, what the hell is this cemetery? I'm like, Armand Hammer, Don Knotts. And then as I walked around, Dean Martin. And then I saw Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah, I think it's the Westwood.
It's Pierce Brothers.
Pierce Brothers. Yes.
Yeah. But Roy Orbison's buried in there unmarked. Frank Zappa's buried in there.
Wow.
And then as I walked around the perimeter, Farrah Fawcett, Rodney Dangerfield.
Wow.
And I was like, I did not know this cemetery existed at all. And it's very peaceful and it's very quaint and it's kind of beautiful, especially when it's amongst this modern, like downtown-y looking Westwood.
Yeah, where cars are just flying by. Okay, listen, one more thing because we got to wrap it up. But you do this driving that I have had one other friend do this kind of driving where like my friend left Denver one day, drove to Boston, couldn't find a parking place, turned around, went back to Denver. I mean, and that's how the story goes.
Makes perfect sense.
That's ridiculous. But you have done these extraordinary, crazy...
My car now is a 2015 Subaru Outback. It's got 169,000 miles on it. The car before had 330,000 miles on it. It was 6 years old. The car before had 259,000 miles on it. It was 4 years old. They were bought with no miles. I drive about 60 or 70,000 miles a year. I'm trying to back off of that because I'm starting to realize with the help of a therapist why I do it. And it's kind of to run away and escape from issues and just hide. But
I'm thinking more along the lines of maybe getting into the driving field, a long-term trucker.
I love it.
Maybe
I
even
love
being
it.
An Uber.
I fantasize about big rig truck driving. Oh, are you talking about me or you?
You.
Oh, no, I
maybe
could never do it.
Uber,
I thought you said
Uber.
You were thinking about doing it.
No,
I'm like, gung-ho on.
You drives.
Do it. Hit the road. Hit the
drive.
Road.
You're telling me you drive, and I'm
no,
saying
no,
let's
no,
turn
no.
this
no.
and make some money.
No, I don't like strangers. I don't want people in my car.
Yeah. That is so true. I would not want people in my car.
The trucking idea I like, but the whole reason I like driving is because I fantasize that I'm exploring, that I'm going somewhere and I can stop and take pictures or make a podcast or record a video. And granted, 9 out of 10 times nothing comes of it, but every now and then I discover something that changes my life.
No, I get it. And, I get that.
You know,
even the road trip you talked about on the show today,
yeah.
it very much is like
yeah.
that. Do you like stopping at 7-Elevens or do you like trying to go to the local places?
I haven't really. I'm not that pure of a human being that I care about like soaking up the local culture. I'm just looking for a story.
Yeah.
I'm just looking for something crazy in the middle of the desert that somebody made or that somebody did, or to figure out why someone's here. Like, why are you out here in the middle of Death Valley?
Interesting.
And it, you know, a lot of times it turns out they're just super antisocial, but I'm riveted by that stuff. I'm fascinated by that stuff.
No, I hear what you're saying. It's not about the people that are traveling. It's about where those people get. It's about the destinations and where they live. Like, I think about Heidi Fleiss lives out.
I've been there many times.
In random Las Vegas, right.
And no, she lives in Pahrump.
In Pahrump, right. And so
I went there the day Art Bell died, specifically because he died, and to pay my respects. And I was shocked and saddened to learn that not one person had gone out there and left a flower at his radio station or at his house.
Aww.
And then I kind of figured maybe he was a total asshole.
Yeah.
And I'm the only guy that didn't
did
get the memo.
Did you take a flower or something?
No. I just went out there to try to be funny.
And how did you know that Heidi lives out there? I mean, did you go look
for
her?
I knew he lived out there because I was fascinated with that show a long time ago.
Oh, you mean Heidi?
No. Art Bell.
But Heidi Fleiss. How did you
I saw a documentary on her.
Yeah. Did you go see her by any chance? I'm just curious because that would be an interesting story and she probably seems...
I wonder if she's still there.
I think she is and she's probably willing to talk about it. Apparently she has
I'm afraid of parrots.
Birds, yeah. Apparently she has a lot of birds.
Yeah.
Exactly. All right. Listen, we got to wrap this up.
Thank you for having me over here.
This was the best story about Burt Reynolds ever. I'm so thrilled.
Thank you.
I can't even tell you. It's the best story. One of my top favorite stories of all 500 episodes I've done of Storyworthy. I swear to God, this made me laugh so hard. It was completely unexpected and it was just great. You told it really well. Thank you.
Thank you.
And join us next week on Storyworthy for the fabulous comedian and host, Helen Hong.
I've always been like pretty squarely straight, except now I'm in my 30s and I'm starting to think, I like the ladies.
Don't miss the talented Helen Hong next week on Storyworthy.
All right, you guys, I got to wrap it up right about now. I want to thank you so much for tuning in today, and especially a big shout out to the sponsors, because you guys, when you support the sponsors, then you're supporting me. That's how it works. So when you do that, I really, really appreciate it. Thank you so much. And I want to thank everybody on the Wondery team, and everybody on the Wondery team. And one more time on behalf of Mike Carano, thank you so much for coming on the show, friend.
Thank you.
My name is Christine Blackburn.
Forth to the rear, and you can follow me, follow me. I'll take you down to the river. Follow me, follow me. I'll keep you silent.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.